Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dirt and Spray continues.
I think I'm becoming lactose intolerant. Is that possible?
It's breakfast time with Dirt and Spray.
Dude, I could choke down six of those easily.
Dirt and Spray.
Eggs, breakfast, and go whoop ass.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. This is the second hour of our radio program. We call Dirt and Spray here on 105.1 The Fan. The Fan Sports Network. The Odyssey app. YouTube.com/105.1 The Fan. Good morning, YouTube. We love you. Thanks for hanging with us on a Thursday morning, a delightful little Thursday morning.
Hello.
Warren Torn, Portland. Day 9.
See, they had to release a statement. Can you hear the choppers in your house, at your spot?
No.
Oh,
I mean, I've heard some choppers, and I saw one that looked military-ish, but yeah. I also get fighter jets that fly in that area.
Yeah, there's a lot of fighter jets out by
and
you.
It's been like that for years.
For years,
but, yeah.
A lot of choppers down in southeast Portland right now.
I know Coop
Lutz. You can just hear
them
constantly.
It. Yeah.
And I'm like, they had to release it. The police had to release a statement yesterday. They were like, these are not our choppers. We have nothing to do with these choppers.
Drove over to Ross Island yesterday, and I saw the stretch of road that leads to the building, and I just saw the little tape and some lights, and I went, literally half of a block, and it's the most big national news story of all time.
Went for a delightful walk last night, looking at neighborhood Halloween decorations, kiddos loving it.
You walked through the fire?
We walked through war-torn Portland. I'm surprised we're here to tell the story today.
We must strive
we
on.
We must push on.
We have a lot to get to in the second hour of the program today. Josh Pate's going to stop by at 7:40.
Yes, he is.
His weekly visit.
His weekly visit, Pate State University. Want to remind you today as well, didn't happen last week, happening this week, today, 4 o'clock, Dan Lanning on with Primetime.
Yes.
So we'll talk with, they will talk with Dan Lanning on our radio station, 105.1 The Fan. It's interesting to see what the Danimal has to say.
He did not do his coach's show again last night.
Yeah, I don't think you have to update me on that anymore. I think it's pretty clear he's quit.
He's quit doing that.
He doesn't care about it. Come on.
Samples, the running back coach, did it. I turned it on last night, and I'm like, where? Oh, okay, we're not doing it again. Okay, there you go.
Well, you know, we have the Monday press conferences. We played some audio on Tuesday's program, and now here we are Thursday.
And he did press after Wednesday's practice.
He had a press conference yesterday, yeah, after practice.
Yeah, also DeCorian Moore spoke.
He did.
Yeah.
That is very rare for Dan Lanning to let true freshmen talk to the media.
I want to say our friend Zach Neal, who covers the Oregon program, I believe he noted in his time he has not seen a freshman in the Lanning era talk.
Sounds about right. Not many of them have had this big of a role as a true freshman. And I think that Lanning was asked about that yesterday of like, hey, what's, you know, we love that we get to talk to him. Why did you make that call? And he basically said, look, he's become a big impact player for us. We trust his maturity. And so we thought it was
I'm guessing
fair by him to let him talk to the media.
The media requests for him were getting out of control. And somebody went into his office. I was like, can he go in front of a microphone? So
he was really well spoken. I haven't heard much. I haven't heard him talk very much because he hadn't done any interviews.
Freshman, you never know.
You never know. And he was really impressive, man. It was fun to listen to him yesterday.
So they talked yesterday. He talked Monday. We played some of the clips and we teed him up and told you, like, neither one of these coaches are ever going to give you something for the other side. They know how to play it. They're professionals. Signetti's in his 60s. He's won everywhere he's gone. And I want to get to Indiana, but I want to ask you this.
Yeah.
Not us locally, although I think you can make an argument that we should be included in this. This is a massive game that feels like it's lacking juice. And I'm not saying you don't care. I'm not saying the Duck fans don't care. But just take our shows and then even add the national narrative stuff.
Right.
Penn State week, it was every single day hitting on the game. Build up, build up, build up, build up. Now, the wideout certainly helps, right? Going to the road environment, the game of games on TV. This one is also, by the way, a top 10 matchup.
I believe it's the only top 10 matchup in the sport this weekend, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, there's two other ranked matchups,
but not top 10.
Not top 10.
Yeah.
And Indiana's coming off of a bye week, beat Iowa, and the week before that, pummeled Illinois by 50 points.
A ranked team, they beat them by 50.
And everybody going into that game was like, Illinois is going to do to Indiana what Indiana ended up doing to Illinois. And I can't quite put my finger on it. We'll have to ask the commissioner of this, too, because as you noted off the air, his Tuesday show is kind of an underrated preview program for him. And he didn't even bring up Oregon, Indiana.
No, he saved it for tonight's show.
This just kind of feels... fair or not fair,
yeah,
like it's lacking juice despite how kind of big the circumstances are and where both teams are at.
So I think there's truth on both sides of this. For one, there has to be a little bit of juice considering game day is in town, so I have to give it like that level of credit.
I will lend you that.
Game day is here, and I'm like, all right, there's a little bit of juice there.
But the buildup.
The talk of a, from a national standpoint about this game, I agree with you 100%. And the only thing that comes to my mind on why that is, and I don't know if this is a fair thing to bring up, I don't know if it has any impact on the game on Saturday, we saw Indiana twice last year play a team that had a championship-level roster, twice, and it did not go well for them in either game. Now, again, I don't know how the game's going to go on Saturday. I think Indiana's better than they were a year ago. I think their quarterback is better than it was a year ago. And I think their defense is incredibly underrated, the more I've dug into them and looked into them going into this weekend's game.
Yeah.
But I think that is, if I'm trying to pinpoint why that is, one, it's that you don't have a lot of, you know, brand household recognition name with Indiana football. Penn State football is one of the most recognizable brands that exists. In a wideout game in front of 100,000 people, like, that's going to bring juice just on its own. And then you add the fact that Oregon winning the Big Ten, the rematch and all that stuff, that's just going to be great from the get-go. This one, Indiana doesn't have the household name, and we saw them in this spot twice last year, and they didn't look like they belonged on the same field. And it's not to take away from Indiana of the great season that they had. They were deserving of being in the playoff, but they were undefeated. I think 10-0 went on the road to Ohio State. The game was essentially over at halftime, and then they put lipstick on a pig at the end of the Notre Dame game, scoring two touchdowns in the last 4 minutes. That was 28-3 with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter in their first playoff game. And so I'm just trying, because you brought this up yesterday, and I thought, you know what, you're right. There's not a lot of national juice on this game.
Well, there's no history between these two teams. Yeah. Like, even with Oregon, they met in the Big Ten title game last year.
With Penn State.
You had the Rose Bowl game in 95.
2004, sir?
How do you forget? Come on!
Five turnover game? Hello?
I was there. Yeah.
People have joked that was the last time a Big Ten team beat Oregon at Autzen, and then everybody reminded them quickly that Washington is in the Big Ten, and they beat you at Autzen.
As a Pac-12.
The only two games before that were 63 and 64.
Yeah, look, I think there's kind of a sprinkling of truth to all of this, right? The history doesn't exist.
Like, how do you guys feel about Indiana? Do you feel Indiana's a legitimate national title contender?
So Indiana now is 1-3 against top 10 teams.
Yeah, they've never, by the way, beaten a top 5 team in the history of their school. I think they have the longest. I heard the stat this week. I think it's 0-46 against top 5 teams.
Well, I have some Indiana stats and some stuff I want to get to coming up next, but like in terms of what we're talking about specifically, the juice, no juice, I think the tough part is just because this has been such a quick flash to being good team that makes playoff and is back in that conversation in year two.
Nothing to something this rapid.
And because Penn State, we went into the Penn State game and we talked about all of the different little angles and matchups and is this finally Franklin's year to win that one game? And we do it. I want to see you do it, bud.
Yeah.
And for three quarters, it was Oregon bludgeoning Penn State. You're not going to do anything. We're going to go up 17-3. Cut, 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 cut. Okay, they win in double overtime. I think because of what you point to there, what Penn State's history is the only reason this from a national narrative, because you're right, game day's going there, so touche on that. But I think the buildup, man, I saw a million Oregon-Penn State things the week of Oregon-Penn State, including on our show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we, every single day of that week,
talked about it. We had
stuff.
Yeah, and this game might be a tougher game.
Exactly. Maybe Indiana will come in here and push Oregon, and it comes down to the wire, and it's like, oh, my God, they survived Indiana, or, hey, Indiana with the upset. Either way, I think it's because we don't trust what we've seen yet. It has not been long enough of established success. And I think if you were to measure it, you'd just say 5-star, 4-star, portal, 3-star, right? That's kind of how you view Indiana largely.
Sure.
And they're successful. They're winning their games. They handled their Illinois business. But I think it's similar to the Illinois game last year. Illinois came in as a good team with a good record ranked.
Yeah, they were top 15, I want to say, at that time, top 20.
That game didn't really have a lot of juice, and it ended up being kind of an ugly game. I don't know if that's going to be the same because, again, to be fair to Indiana, they handled Illinois. But,
yes.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a sprinkling of all of that, which is why it lacks some of the gravitas that a wideout Oregon-Penn State game had.
Well, and look, we also have to be honest, and this is not just the case in college football. It's the case in all of sports. Brands matter, and Indiana football is not a brand. It just isn't. Maybe if Cignetti's there for 5 years and they continue on this trajectory and they keep doing this, they'll turn into a brand eventually. Like, I'm excited to see the Blue Jays in the ALCS. We'd all be lying to ourselves to say New York being in the ALCS is more juice for the sports crowd than it is for the Blue Jays. And that's no offense to the Blue Jays.
Well, this happens in every
sport.
This
is every sport,
right?
So, like, if you insert any other Big Ten team here that has the same resume and same record as Indiana, if this is Ohio State, if this is Penn State, as we're highlighting, if this is Michigan undefeated, if the Wisconsin even, like, if it's
Nebraska.
Like, all of those programs carry more weight than Indiana does, just from a name recognition standpoint.
Yeah.
Indiana football is one of the worst in all of college football. Their history is as bad as literally anybody. So that's part of this for me, too. And I think to add on top of that, what they desperately need to change that
is
and to
this.
Have juice, they need a win.
They
like
need this.
This
one, yeah.
And I don't even know if they need to win this game. If they're, I think they can get moral victory points out of this game. If
I agree
this
with
comes
that.
Down to the wire, Oregon kicks a last second field goal and it's 38-35, and they show they can go on the road and hang with a team with the talent composite of Oregon's level.
Right.
I think it wakes everybody up to say, wow. Okay, Indiana can hang in that environment. Maybe they can do something this year. If they go in and lose this game and it's 45-21 and never really close and Oregon jumps on them and Mendoza looks overwhelmed and the line of scrimmage play is a big gap, they're not going to have any juice in their remaining games and they will be the same Indiana for a lot of people from a year ago.
I think that's very fair. I do think Wisconsin, as established as they were for such a long time, I think, look, right now it doesn't help that they've hit the skids and they got the wrong coach and culture fit and all that.
It's ugly right
now. But I think even if this was Wisconsin at this ranking, Wisconsin kind of had a little bit of this Indiana stuff, right? They were consistently very good.
But not great.
But never truly great for most people. Think about the last year for Anderson. Anderson's at Wisconsin. He gets to a Big Ten title game. What was the final of that game?
59-0, I believe.
So, like,
that
Wisconsin
was the Cardale Jones Big Ten title game.
Is a more established version of this in many ways. Like, even the years they get to the Rose Bowl, it wasn't like it was Wisconsin some juggernaut undefeated team. It was, hey, Wisconsin's here because Ohio State can't be here because they're too good. They need to go to the other game. And so, like, I think even Wisconsin and their nature of, like, we run the football with big guys. It's like,
it's just boring.
How exciting is that, buddy? Like, I think even Wisconsin, to your point, there's a
that's
little
fair.
More.
Wisconsin could definitely be in that category, too,
But I want to know from Duck fans out there, because I know you guys out there rooting for your team.
Oh, we're sickos. We're diving into it. I watched a 45-minute film breakdown of this game yesterday.
Great. I want to hear from you guys where you're at on the juice or national noise of the game, because even though game day's coming to town, it doesn't feel like it's quite grabbed the rest of the narrative storylines, as you pointed out. It's the only top 10 ranked matchup on the docket this weekend.
And game day only went because Texas lost. If Texas had beaten Florida, they would have been at the Red River game.
Very fair. So you can chime in with your thoughts on where you're at. Juice, no juice. Little juice. Big cup of juice. Extra large juice. 503-864-6326. I got some stuff on Indiana I want to get to, and so we'll get to that coming up next. Pate State is going to join us at 740. Dirt and Sprague. Hour number two is rolling along on Oregon, Indiana next on 105.1 The Fan.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. We're going to have a little bit of a shorty. We call it our Andy Johnson segment before Josh Pate.
That's fair. I'm pretty tiny.
You're not.
I mean, I am. It's all right.
You're a tall fat.
Only if I was 6'2", man. Would have been D1.
Not pro. I like that you stopped yourself from going pro.
I don't know how. I don't know how it would have gone. I don't know if I would have been able to handle the pressure. I don't know. All the things that would have been presented to me. Who knows? I could have caved. Could have crumbled.
Would have been Coke Johnson if you would have gone D1. I would have been terrified
you
for you.
You see the movie of The Program? You know, right there. Let's go, baby.
Just talking a little bit about this Oregon-Indiana game on a Thursday. We'll talk more about it with Josh Pate, who, as we noted, didn't get to it Tuesday at all for his previews. Says he's going to get to it today, and I believe him on that.
We'll get the first look at his preview of the game.
Yes, we will, an early peekaboo. Game day's going to be here, but I just think there is truth to it. It doesn't mean you're not interested or the Duck fans locally here aren't fired up for these opportunities. It's just, I don't know. The nation is not, it's not capturing the country, this Indiana situation. And I think it's far more Indiana than it is Oregon because we know Oregon has established their reputation. I went and looked at Indiana football.
Dude,
it's dark.
It's dark.
They are
How many 10-win seasons do they have in the history of their program?
So they're almost 200 games below 500 as an existing program. Like in their entire history, which started in
long time ago, man.
1899.
Swag was 14, dude.
14-year-old Swigart in 1899.
All of it play out.
Has been through 127 seasons of Indiana football.
Where are my Benjamin Buttons?
And they are almost 200 games below 500. Oh. Here's a fun fact for you, because you just asked an important question. Last year, they were 11-2.
11-2. 11-1 in the regular season, lost in the playoffs to Notre Dame.
11-2, right? You ask, that's pretty good for them, and you're 100% right. Prior to 1967, Indiana football had not won more than 8 games.
Yeah.
And if you're asking, oh, well, what were they like pre-1967, Sprague? I'll say, good question, Bob. They had never won more than 9. That literally was their greatest season in program history.
That tells you all you need to know. That's why there's not a lot of juice on this game. If they win this game, I think people open their eyes up to Indiana.
Antoine Randall L days?
No,
that's
they only
nothing.
Won 8 or less prior.
Lee Corso is a legend for them. He wasn't even that good when he was there. It was winning like 6 or 7 games a year.
Yeah, Indiana football is an absolute disaster. Now, here's another thing on Cignetti, because he is the one thing that kind of keeps me to say, how is this game going to unfold?
Mm-hmm.
He himself in his press conference told you they got a massive advantage up front. And that's not a secret. Everybody in the country knows this about Oregon at this point. I'm more just curious to see the schematics of this.
Sure.
How is it going to look? How can he find an edge? He kept referencing that in his press conference. Got to find the edge. Got to find the edge. Kurt Cignetti, as a college football coach, both in D1 and D2,
mm-hmm.
He is 135-37.
It's a hell of a record, man.
This dude...
He wins. Google him.
Google him and read about him. He's an unbelievable story. He is somebody that, for most of his entire career, nobody's given him any recognition to.
No.
But he's a winner.
He's very similar to DeBoer in that way, where it was a lot of years at lower levels where you're just racking up wins and wins and wins and wins and wins, and it takes you a while. I know he's older, a little bit older than DeBoer, but you look at their all-time career records, and they're hilariously insane.
I mean, he was the PSAC Coach of the Year in 2012, don't you know?
I mean, there how you do go. You not?
I mean, the Pennsylvania... What is it? The Pennsylvania State Athletic Conference Coach of the Year. How do you not know that?
I was at the awards banquet, man.
And I learned that because I Googled him. Okay? Yeah. So Kurt Cignetti is an interesting part, but Indiana football, I mean, there is just nothing of no. You know Michael Penix went there.
Yeah.
You know that Antoine Randall L. went there.
Yep.
Nate Sudfeld had some success in the passing department. Other than that, Lee Corso, and that's about it, buddy.
That's about it. The tough part, too, is they can't even, I mean, they can claim Penix, but Penix was, I mean, we all remember him as a Husky.
And in that regard.
More than we will a Hoosier. Like, he might be their best player ever, and he did his best stuff in a different uniform.
And in that regard, there's nothing to be gained by the Ducks chirping.
No, I mean, there's nothing. No, Oregon's not going to do that.
Oregon will never chirp. Oregon will never chirp to any ranked opponent in the Dan Lanning era.
No, they won't do it to anybody.
Well, that's, they'll chirp, but it depends. Like, what was the kid that chirped at the little brother Oregon State stuff?
Oh, was it Jerry Mixon that said that?
Jerry Mixon, yeah. He's basically going to whoop their ass, little brother.
If there's any chirping, it's going to be...
pretty safe chirping that one.
It's going to be the Huskies, it's going to be USC, it's going to be Ohio State, something like that where there is nothing to be gained by any chirping in this regard.
Well, I mean, to your point on the size, that to me is one of the biggest stories of this entire game. Of, you know, I mentioned the Indiana games last year that we saw when they played Ohio State and Notre Dame. The biggest difference was where. It was at the line of scrimmage, right? Yeah. And they had good skill players, and Rourke was a good quarterback. I think they've upgraded in a lot of areas this year, and I don't even feel like their composite talent ranking is fair. Like, they have gone about finding guys. Use their starting running back as an example. Mm-hmm. He's a sixth-year guy. Like, they go and find, like, he was at Maryland. He was really good, but he's played a ton of college football. Very experienced group. They haven't played a ton of together because some of these guys are new and portaling in, but it's guys who have seen a lot. Even Mendoza was, what, a 2 or 3 year starter at Cal? Like, he's played a lot of snaps. He started against Oregon before. He started against Dante Moore at UCLA. That's how long he's been around. So he's played a lot of football. That's kind of the, you know, you see that up and down their roster. So I think to look at the composite ranking, it's not totally fair because some of these guys were not big deals coming out of high school. But when you play 5 or 6 years of college football, your experience and you could bring something to the table. The biggest question, I think, in this game, and it will be the case for a lot of these teams. I thought we talked about this when Washington played Ohio State, when Nebraska played Michigan, that you can make noise in the non-conference and you can look good. But when you go against a team that's just simply bigger and stronger than you at the point of attack, can you actually win? The average weight of the defensive line at Indiana is 279 pounds. That's the average weight of their defensive line. The average weight of Oregon's offensive line is 325 pounds. That is an average weight difference of 46 pounds. Now, that's not the end-all be-all. Indiana's defensive line is incredibly disruptive. They love using slants and stunts. They create a ton of tackles for loss. They can get into the backfield. But can they hold up for four quarters with a 46-pound weight differential is the biggest question to me in this game. If they can, Mendoza might be the number one pick in the draft. He might be the best quarterback in the game this weekend, and they can absolutely hang around. That is the ultimate question that we have to answer about Indiana, is when you go toe-to-toe against a beefy offensive line and a beefy defensive line, can you push them around and can you handle your own?
There's a really good piece on Mendoza and Moore and how they've been the two best quarterbacks in the sport this year, and it largely is like an anonymous scouts and coaches that have watched both of them play and said they're perfect for their system and they do exactly what they need to do,
yep.
Which is why their profile has been so elevated. I kind of look at this and I don't – Oregon winning by 20 is not going to have me on the couch going, whoa. But if this game is close, I actually think it's not just going to be schematically what does Cignetti and company find for their offense against that defense – it's also going to be a little bit of like, oh, Dante had a tip pass picked or Dante read something incorrectly. Like, it's going to be something, a fumble. Like,
you could get pouring down rain that could create weird chaos in this game.
Because
as well.
What did we see in the Oregon Penn State game? Like, the thinnest of margins in a comeback is Noah Whittington's knee. Is it down or not down?
Yeah.
Because sometimes those change things, right? So
DeCorian Moore had a ball go through his hands. It probably should have been picked.
And then it went through that guy's hands, and then he caught it. Yeah,
so game.
Sometimes it's weird stuff. Yeah. I want to ask you, I cannot find, my hardest part in Indiana is also, I cannot find a comp, right? Like, you can give me programs that elevate, like Clemson being a national title contender.
Like, Clemson was already good.
They were Clemsoning, right? They were really good, but they could never break through, and then they broke through. It's really hard to find this. The only one that I can think of is actually a team doing it right now, Vandy. But Vandy had a couple seasons with Franklin where you're like, oh, it's a pretty respectable program.
Yeah.
Vandy now might be on the doorstep of being Indiana in the SEC of they win 10 games, they go to the playoff, and they can't hang, but they're really feisty. I can't find a comp in my life of a team that was this profile that is now this profile.
I can't think of... I mean, we've seen like a TCU come out of nowhere and go to a title game, but TCU's been a good program for a long time. That was out of nowhere for them to get to the championship game.
Yeah.
That was rare, but it wasn't like they were a doormat of college football.
They
that's
were
what
a doormat
Indiana has been
was.
For 100-plus years.
Yeah.
They have been nothing. So to your point, I don't know if there's a comp out there that we've seen a team go from 0 to 100 so quickly.
Yeah.
Even Vandy, like you can say Vandy's building that. Vandy was 7-5 last year. So they're making noise in the SEC. The schedule is more challenging, so that's part of it. But they're building into something. Indiana went from nothing to going 11-1 last year.
Yeah.
And that's very, very rare to do in the sport.
And I found kind of the narrative talking points of them funny because they handled their patsies of the Big Ten schedule portion.
Mm-hmm.
I found it funny that we used that as a knock against him when zero people knew who Kurt Cinetti was.
Never heard of him before.
Or even thought Indiana was going to be a bowl team, let alone what they were. But then when they became, it was like, well, they're not playing anybody. It's like, who? Did you know anything about Indiana? Right. Like, how about we give Indiana some credit for not being the Patsy winning against Patsies? They were a juggernaut against the Patsies. I think him and Lanning, I think you make a strong argument they've been the best portal coaches in the last 2 years.
I mean, it's hard to disagree for sure. And Indiana has had to lean on it more because they don't have the recruiting profile that Oregon does. So it's been far more important to them. And the other part of them this year is like, they're going to have their cracks at it, man. Like they had to play only one of the elite teams in the Big Ten last year, and Ohio State didn't go well for them. They're on the road at Oregon this weekend. They got a chance to make noise. I know everybody's out on Penn State, but that's still a very talented roster, and we'll see how the rest of their year goes. They go to Penn State in a couple of weeks, like in a month. They're in on the road at Penn State.
Where's Penn State going to be?
Where
mentally,
are they going
right?
to be at? Like they got chances here to make some noise and win one of these games. And I think the longer they stick around and the more they can prove themselves in games like this, the more juice they're going to have.
We got Pate State coming up. A shorty segment coming up next. Somebody comping Dennis Erickson to Kurt Cinetti.
Yeah, it's not bad. We got asked about Jim Harbaugh, too. Harbaugh, I think he was more of a slow build. That program was in disarray. He went 4-8, 5-7, 8-5, then had the 12-1 season.
He
and
didn't
left
have
for
a portal, though.
That's totally different, dude. Totally different. Erickson's not bad. That's a pretty good one. Riley was there for 2 years, obviously, then left. He was 5-6. Riley was a 98.
He kind of did the portal thing with the JUCO kids.
That's exactly what he did, right? Erickson went 7-5, though, in his first year.
Yeah.
And then in year two, went 11-1, and they won the Fiesta Bowl.
Right.
So that's not bad. That's probably the closest you'll find. But it's just, to your point, though, it's not this way of building a team in a microwave in the offseason did not exist 20 years ago.
We also just thought, you know, there's going to be a step back because you built it all from James Madison, and then he brings in new guys, and it
might have the
right
number
along.
One pick in the draft, a quarterback, dude.
Exactly.
If he wins this weekend, he's going to be the easy favorite to be that.
We'll get to the Blazers. Certain guy performed pretty well yesterday in that preseason game.
Blake Wesley? Jeremy Grant? Who are we talking about?
Starter Jeremy Grant.
Oh, yes.
But no, not Jeremy Grant.
Can't bring him off the bench.
Bench guy.
Yeah.
Bench guy performed pretty well. We'll talk about that coming up. We'll get to some NFL dealings as well. Thursday Night Football, one team on the hot seat, and it ain't the team that's the underdog.
Ooh.
Mm. Internal strife.
Ooh.
But let's talk a little bit more about this. The juice, no juice, but top 10 matchup nonetheless with game day in town at Autzen Stadium, Indiana, Oregon. Pate State University joins us for his Thursday check-in. We'll talk Oregon, Indiana, and the slate of college football with Josh Pate coming up next on 105.1 The Fan.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
Pelican invites you to take a beach break at one of their coastal locations. Pacific City, Tillamook, Cannon Beach, Lincoln City, and coming soon to Rockaway Beach. Pelican Brewing. Born at the beach.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. The Daily Ticker brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company. Four coastal locations, Pacific City, Tillamook, Lincoln City, Cannon Beach, and soon to be, coming soon, to a coastal town near you, Rockaway Beach. PelicanBrewing.com. Born at the beach. The Commissioner of College Football joining us every Thursday as he does around 7:40. Josh Pate at Josh Pate CFB, the Josh Pate College Football Show on YouTube. Catch him on all the other platforms covering the sport in any and every way. Give him a follow on Instagram as well. Those Friday night lines hit different. He gives you all behind the scenes access at his stops. And we got to jump on the Ramen Noodle Express whenever we can. Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. So we got a new episode tonight. Now, Dirt noted, Pate, that you on Tuesday regrettably did not discuss Ducks Hoosiers. Not
What's
enough.
Your beef, Pate? Why do you hate my team, man?
And so I want to know, man, you must be saving some big, juicy top 10 action in Autzen Stadium for a Thursday edition of Josh Pate College Football Show tonight.
That's actually what the rundown says. I'm looking at it in front of me, and you verbatim. So I would love to find our leak.
Look, here's what I did the other night. And shame on me for only saying three times in the show, I'm going to hit Indiana, Oregon on Thursday. Because what people do, I have found, is they look at the timestamps. So they just go to the time of the show where it coincides with what they want to watch. Well, they looked and they looked and they looked. No Indiana, Oregon. This guy's a bum. Let me go call him out on the internet. And I was like, hey, guy. Hey, fella. Hey, Billy from Bend. I'm going to get to it. I told you I was going to get to it on Thursday. And then I've got certain hosts up there in the Pacific Northwest, and I certainly don't want to name names.
Sure.
But some people are prone to fanning certain flames, and I feel like that's what we're doing right now.
Well, I think we've learned in the last 2 weeks, if you pick against a team, you clearly hate that team. You hated Texas last week. I don't know how you could have been so wrong about that game, Pate. And then if you don't talk about them on the show, you got to hate them as well. Now, there's a lot of nasty rumors out there that Dan Lanning's opening up Gatorade bottles with two hands and closing the fridge with his hip, which has me a little concerned about my head coach. The beautiful part about you not previewing it on Tuesday, and it was funny to hear you mention it multiple times when I see the YouTube comments like, hey, where's Oregon, Indiana at? The beautiful part about having you on today is that you haven't previewed the game yet on your show. You will tonight. We're excited to hear the whole thing. But just your initial thought, man, we were just talking about there not being a lot of juice in this game, even though game day is going to be in town. Do you feel the same way, and how much of it being Indiana being the opponent has to play into that?
I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. It plays into it for me. Like, I like to go to at least one Oregon game a year. And, look, I'm putting a lot of stock in USC right now. I'll admit that. But I'm trying to save my trip up there for later in the year. That's why I'm not up there this weekend. Mm. And that's not the way Dan Lanning and his team can afford to look at it. But that's the way I look at it. I think there's a lot of verification that still needs to happen with Indiana. Frankly, I'm going to see a game in Columbia, Missouri, where that has to happen with Missouri as they play Alabama.
Yeah.
Difference is they're at home. Indiana's on the road. Indiana's been really good at really flexing when they can, but then you have the Ohio State game last year, and then you have the Notre Dame game last year. And also the Iowa game this year, everyone thinks about the Illinois game. Well, that wasn't on the road. I think about the Iowa game because that was on the road, and that was a really close game. It sounds like I'm trying to talk myself into Oregon. It's not hard to talk yourself into Oregon. That place is incredible, unless you're the road team to play in. I think that they are a scaling team, like they are an ascension mode type team. But I just want to see Indiana like flex on someone their own size or bigger, which Oregon is, and I want to see them do it on the road. And until I see that, it's not doubting or hating to just kind of have that skeptical viewpoint. If it were Georgia, you know, maybe I'll blindly buy into them. I don't blindly buy into Indiana. And, you know, maybe that's a bygone way of looking at the sport. Okay. Like, I do okay picking these games. I've been a Texas homer and hater in the past 8 days, guys. So I have found a way to wear all hats. I'm going to take – I mean, is this spoiling the show tonight?
The reveal.
I may possibly. Oh. Hey, maybe I'm taking Oregon straight up, but Indiana plus the points. Maybe I'm doing that. The most cheap double – what is that, bench rider two-way go, whatever that is, that may be what I do tonight.
Look at that.
You don't want to offend either fan base.
Yeah, breaking news on the show there. Everybody's now happy with Josh Pate.
I do want to ask you though on that, because I think that's interesting. Like, what is that line, Dirt? Is it 7.5?
7.5, yeah. It's come down in the week.
It's below double digits, right? And Oregon winning by double digits, I don't think shocks any one of the three of us. But if Indiana keeps that within a touchdown, and it's like, oh, can they get a stop here? Even if they lose, I think that kind of says something about Indiana. I couldn't find, and you obviously being from the South and being so into the SEC growing up and now in the entire sport, maybe you can come up with one. I can't find an example in my life that is similar, a comp, than what Indiana has become in just a season and a half, and surely probably will be by the end of the year. A program of Indiana's level was the 9 a.m. kick on ESPN that I never literally cared about one time in my entire life growing up.
In front of a quarter full stadium.
And now it is a top 10 tilt that, to your point, is lacking some juice for the obvious reasons. Just, can you think of another comp in your life of a program that's taken a step the way that Cignetti has at Indiana?
Yeah, it's Dan Mullen at Mississippi State.
Okay.
He got them to number one in the country when Dak was there. And I remember vividly, hold on, I'm walking out here to get my breakfast bowl.
Oh, we know. Ooh, we know.
Oh, yeah, it's
we know. We know the stair sound. Yeah. We know where you're going when you're walking the stairs. We know what's going on.
It's so sad. So that was 2014, I think it was. They're number one. Mississippi State's number one in the country. They go to Alabama. Now, it didn't matter that State was number one. They're still a double-digit underdog. But it was only, you know, like 12 or 13, which if you played in Tuscaloosa in those days and you were only – if you were anywhere under a two-touchdown dog, you were legit. And they went in there, and it was a really hard-fought game. I was at the game. Bama ended up winning, but it was like a four-quarter war type game. Physically, they never wore Mississippi State down. And I do think what you're saying has a lot of merit. Like, if we were to turn this game on and Oregon's winning 30-27, I think that would just utterly stun a lot of people that it was even that close. Because I don't think a lot of people who don't get are even aware that, you know, the odds makers' perception of this game is if you were to shave home field off of this point spread, that's what Oregon minus like four and a half, something like that. So they don't perceive there to be a massive gap between these teams, and I think that would surprise a lot of people, which is always why I try and – I know some people don't like the betting talk. That's fine. You don't need to bet on this stuff. I just want to use it to provide proper perspective going into games. Like, I was going to get up this morning, and they asked me, can Missouri pull the upset on Alabama? And I just asked, what are we talking about? The spread's three. What upset? What are we talking about here? So I kind of similarly think that way about Indiana, Oregon. Like, if Oregon wins this game close, you know as well as I do, they're going to be folks saying, uh-oh, what's wrong with Oregon? Well, nothing. They just won a game.
Yeah. Against a team who's ranked in the top 10, who is pretty darn good. I want to ask you, you mentioned having some faith in USC and trying to get out to Autzen for that game later in the year. They got a big one this weekend, man. Lincoln Riley 2.0, they're kind of restarting the way they're building that thing, reinventing the way they're going about trying to focus on defense and recruiting and all of that. They lose on the road at Illinois and give up 500 yards of offense, and they would say defensive injuries are a big part of it, and they're probably not wrong. But now Michigan comes to town, another team that can handle them at the line of scrimmage and ran the ball exclusively last year in their win in Ann Arbor. How big is that one for Lincoln Riley in year four?
Really, really big, because they lost the Illinois game. So I think I was on with you guys preseason, and I said the Illinois game is the circle game. And it sounds weird if you're not dialed in on Southern Cal, but I am, so I do know that was the circle game. Well, they lost it. So the reason that was the circle game is because if you can't go handle Illinois, you still know, man, you got like games with Michigan coming up, and they're like a Illinois on steroids from a talent profile. And I just really worry the whole Lincoln Riley 2.0 thing. Like, I mean, if we get to a place, hold on, my Uber Eats went to the wrong road. You guys know how this works sometimes. if they get to a place where they lose this, and if they lose it kind of like they did last year, where Michigan ran for 290 on them, what are you talking about? Because here's where I think they are. Where I think they are is they made good personnel moves. They made a good move last year at coordinator. But they can't flip the roster overnight. Now, I am a believer if they were to have patience another year with Riley, he'd get it turned around. But you don't get to ask for patience when you're several years in. And I do get that as well, because he should have made the right hires at the outset and all that. So if they get leaned on here and they get physically dominated, it's going to be a bad look. And there's going to be a lot of talk out there. They'll be in must-win mode the rest of the way. So they got receivers that match up well with Michigan. It's just, do they have time to throw? That's basically it.
Josh Pate, our guest here, Pate State, every Thursday at 7:40. Josh Pate College Football Show on YouTube. Catch him on all the other platforms covering the sport as well, Bussing with the Boys, etc. On Twitter at Josh Pate CFB. Sunday, Tuesday, and tonight's Thursday edition, which he will talk more about Indiana and Oregon on Instagram as well for Friday Night Lines, the Ramen Noodle Express, and behind the scenes. I want to ask you a college football coach question, but you just, for some reason, listening to you grab the breakfast bowl and moving on, I'm not pocket watching, okay? But we can all be honest that life has gone well for Josh Pate. Do you feel more pressure when people recognize you to tip 20%+ in everything you do?
Oh,
great question. Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. Yep. One of my nightmares, like, some people are scared of drowning. Some people are scared of, like, falling out of a plane. That's their reoccurring nightmare. My reoccurring nightmare is, not that I've ever been an under-tipper, but I undertip one time in my life, and then that person lets it be known on Twitter, and then till the end of time, I am bearing that brunt. I don't want to be that guy. I can't be that guy. So, if anything, I just had this conversation last night with my waiter, no less. So, buddy, it's going to be a good night for you. because it was great service. And also, he had recognized me, and I said, yeah, I can't have that. I mean, you could ruin me. Do you know that? You could ruin me right now. What, poisoning your food? No, no, no. That would be a cakewalk compared to what you could do online.
Well, the reason I asked that question is because the waiter reached out. He knew he was on Pate State. He listens to Dirt and Sprague from way over
clearly,
there.
Clearly,
so
yeah.
He gave me info. And he's like, hey, he tips and he feels that pressure.
Say, hey, I saw you on ESPN this morning. It's a $4 tip, dude. What are we doing here? Now, I got a philosophical question for you, Pate. I hear the slander that is keep getting brought up about Dan Lanning from opposing coaches. Should it be slander to be a tummy sleeper? What is your take on tummy sleeping?
Come on.
I think it depends on how your neck feels, how your back feels. Also, do you have sleep apnea issues, that sort of thing? And look, I don't want to delve into Dan Lanning's personal life. That would be a HIPAA violation, or HIPPO violation, masculine form of HIPAA. But I just think that if you understand Dan Lanning, you understand it doesn't matter if you're his best friend and everyone understands it's tongue-in-cheek. That guy gets a little something from us playing around with him on air.
Yeah.
Again, because that's just the way he is. Well, I'm happy to participate. If that's what it takes for Oregon to cover this weekend, if it takes us saying that Lanning needs someone else to open his ketchup bottles for him, if it takes us planting fake texts from Kurt Cignetti, that's all for the greater good. I think that's good for the sport.
Yeah. I want to ask you before we let you go here, because I know you want to dive into the breakfast bowl. It sounds delicious. What is the scuttlebutt with the coaches circle that you're hearing on all of this Belichick stuff that is clearly flailing and flopping around, and it's kind of only a matter of time before that is going to end? What is kind of the takeaway off the record that you're getting from people?
I think it's done. I don't think it's going to work. No one thought it was going to work. No one thinks it's going to work. It's not working. And they're going to keep losing, by the way. So I don't know what they pull the plug. And is there a mutually agreed upon reduced buyout? That's really what I'm waiting on now.
Is there a bigger gap right now, not to go crazy here, but in your lifetime, is there a bigger gap, though, it feels, than what it takes to be an NFL coach versus what college football currently is with portal boosters and all of that than having to go from one to the other?
Yes, that's why, like, all these people who keep saying, oh, it's just like the NFL, it's just like the NFL, they were always wrong about that. Sorry, I had to say hey to someone right quick. They were always wrong about that. And I don't, look, it's not Bill Belichick's fault. Thank you. It's not Bill Belichick's fault that he took $10 million a year to coach college football because he can't offer himself the job. So it's the fault of those who offered him the job. And when you really understand how that dynamic works, you understand, oh, they went over the AD's head. And it was Board of Trustee members who have no idea what they're doing, really, when it comes to hiring a coach that hired him just because it's Bill Belichick, and they watched him win a bunch of Super Bowls. So, oh, it must work in college because we heard some people on TV say college is like the NFL now. Well, it's not, and it never was, and it isn't pacing that way. So now they're going to have to get rid of him. But now the pathetic thing is it's Bubba Cunningham, the AD, who's the one who has to, you know, put his name on all the fancy graphics they're putting out at 9:30 on a Tuesday or Wednesday morning. Oh, I believe in him. You know, I never hired him to begin with, but trust me, I believe in him. And everyone knows it's fake. Even everyone up there knows it's fake.
Yeah.
And it will end. The question is when.
Well, we look forward to the new episode tonight. Josh Pate College Football Show on YouTube. He'll dive fully into Oregon, Indiana, Cignetti. Google me. I'll be in Autzen this weekend. We look forward to that top 10 matchup, as we always look forward to our conversations with Josh Pate every Thursday starting at 7:40. Thanks for hopping on with us again, Pate. Enjoy the college football. We look forward to the Ramen Noodle Express, and we'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right, there we go. Josh Pate, Josh Pate College Football Show on Twitter, at Josh Pate. CFB. That's the Daily Ticker, and it's brought to you by our great friends at Pelican Brewing Company. They have four coastal locations: Pacific City, Tillamook, Lincoln City, Cannon Beach, and soon to be, coming soon,
hey,
Rockaway Beach. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach. Loaded third hour of the program. We'll dive into the Portland Trailblazers performance of one player, specifically.
One guy picked up right where he left off last year.
I wonder which one you're talking about.
No, definitely can't trade him.
We'll get to that. We will get to the Mariners, who are on the brink of either heartbreak or coming through again against Scooble for the fourth time in one season.
4-0, man. That'd be impressive.
And we'll talk some more college football, NFL, Thursday Night Football as well. Dirt and Sprague back with more on 105.1 The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.